This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
You gotta see the baby. When are you gonna see the baby?
Family Matters.
That's on.
Family Matters on Joy 94.9. Welcome to your favourite and my favourite hour of radio. Now, for some reason on Family Matters, we are short of a few players tonight. We've got a few players out, and we do welcome to the studio for his Family Matters debut. You might have heard him on Monday Night Outtakes. Welcome Daniel White. Oh, Daniel, what's your name? You might have a few Facebook
you got
requests
it right
now. Welcome to Primetime.
Oh, thank you. Primetime, yeah. That one nearly got past me. Sure, Primetime for the next hour.
Yeah, I'd love to see how our very lovely producer, Gina, wrangled you in the last minute. We do appreciate you being a part of the team.
I'm pleased to be here. And I'm really excited, actually, about what we're going to talk about over the course of the next hour.
And we are also joining later on the show is by Kate Bourne, who is a donor register services manager working for VARTA, which we'll explain what VARTA stands for and what VARTA do later in the show. We do have a few other topics. Daniel, you made your public appearance at Equal Love Rally this Saturday. I have seen you on billboards, newspapers, magazines.
We were walking through the rally crowd and we just landed right in front of the stage. And the rally itself was excellent, quite long. But, yeah, a really excellent rally. And, yeah, it was a thrill to be a part of.
Well, we're going to talk all that and more. And plus, if you've got any questions, let's text in and welcome Daniel to the team, 0427-JOY-949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9, and coming up is a request from Daniel.
Throwing me under the bus.
Celine Dion, here it is.
You're listening to Family Matters with any combination of Gina, Adrian, Michelle, David and Beck. Joy 94.9.
It is Family Matters, and funnily enough, any combination of Gina, Beck, Michelle, Adrian or myself. Did I mention myself twice? I don't know.
You did.
Daniel, you're making your debut from Outtakes onto Family Matters. And I think, you know what, it's good to have you on because it's a perfect week to have you on because you've been the face of the Equal Love Rally. So if you do have any questions for
That's
Daniel.
That's a bit of a worry, isn't it?
Yeah, if you want to text in, maybe get his autograph or something, it's 0427-JOY-949 or you can email on air at joy.org.au. How was the Equal Love Rally? I heard there was 20,000 plus people. Now, I'm talking like I wasn't there, which is quite scary, but I wasn't. Sorry.
No, look, it was really encouraging. I think, you know, my brother rocked up, my twin brother. He won't be listening at the moment, but if he is, I was so grateful. That's one of the most encouraging things that I think about the rally, but also about the broader debate that we're seeing, how encouraging our allies have been,
yep.
Including people like my brother. And that's why there were 20,000 people there, and it was really, it was almost overwhelming the amount of support that there was. Even people who didn't know that there was a rally who were lining up on the streets and just supporting all of us as we were kind of marching through the city.
And now looking back, it might become our most important rally that has ever been staged anywhere in Australia.
Well, it might become our last one.
Well, I think it will be. Let's get on with it, Malcolm.
I mean, that depends what happens in court, doesn't it? Because, of course, the postal poll is being challenged in
That's
court.
Right, yes. So you're the legal eagle in this room right now, more than I am. So explain the High Court challenge, what's happening there, and can it be shut down and will it be shut down?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. My personal opinion is I think there are strong grounds for the postal plebiscite. And, I mean, I think this is a matter of characterization, isn't it? Because the government's calling it a postal vote. This, as far as I'm concerned, is a rose by any other name. So I think it's a plebiscite, and I think there are strong grounds for the High Court overturning the plebiscite. The most obvious one, of course, is that all expenditure by the government needs to be approved by Parliament, and Parliament simply hasn't approved this spending.
$122 million worth?
It's a lot of money. And if the government can spend $122 million of its own accord, you know, what does that say about democracy or the rule of law? So I think constitutionally there are really solid grounds for challenging this.
Now, the Rainbow Families, which obviously is very close to our hearts, has been in the focus of the No campaign. There's been some ads on our television boxes about, you know, how voting yes could affect our Rainbow Families. And there's been a disgusting, let's call them a disgusting newspaper out of Sydney that have ran with a story that that there was a lady that was raised by two lesbian mums claiming that not having a father in her life was, quote, very difficult for her to affirm a stable identity. Now, obviously families come up with so many different shapes and sizes, different parents set up, different whatever, grandmas, granddads. You know, all it takes, I think, from my personal view, is two loving people to raise a family. So I'm just not sure why our kids are in the focus of this debate.
And research supports exactly what you're saying. The longitudinal studies show that simply isn't any evidence to support that children who are raised by two people of the same gender fare any worse in the long run. One of my best friends was raised by two mothers, and he's so appreciative to have had two female, strong female role models in his life. And that, you know, for him to hear people saying that he should have had a mother and a father rather than the two women who raised him is just not fair. And I, you know, it really annoys me, because these people who purport to be thinking of the children are actually, I think, potentially doing more harm to children by saying that their families are illegitimate, because we know that being raised by two people of the same sex just isn't harmful.
So it is our responsibility on Family Matters to love and support, and most importantly, stand up for our lovely rainbow families. They've joined us on air and the many around Australia, and that is something that we will keep on doing right to the end of this survey.
And just quickly, the other really encouraging thing about the rally was how many families were actually there. It was so great to see, you know, children of all ages there and embraced as part of this community supporting change.
We've had Felicity and Sarah on from Rainbow Families Victoria, and the one thing they're very good at is rallying numbers up I think they're headed to Canberra on a road trip to smash the plebiscite the first time around, and they're at it again.
With their kids.
Now, yeah, they've been up there with all the kids on the massive road trip. We had them on pre-road trip and post-road trip to hear about it. So they know how to fight a plebiscite, I'm sure they're doing it again.
There'll be a podcast of that chat.
Of course, there's a podcast. You can search for our podcast, Joy Family Matters, on Joy 94 point. What is it? Joy.org.au. Or you can search for it on iTunes. Now, coming up, we do have a lovely guest, Kate Bourne, who is a donor register services manager working for VARTA. So we'll learn a lot about VARTA and the importance of talking about donor conception with children. You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
There's more from the Family Matters team in just a moment on Joy 94.9.
Welcome, Family Matters. Just to let you know, we do have a ring in tonight, Daniel from Outtakes. So if you are in your car later on, and you're thinking this is my favourite show, Family Matters, but who is this new voice? It is Daniel from Outtakes, which you can find at 7 o'clock on Joy Monday nights.
That's right, and all of our podcasts are available online as well.
Cheap plug. I'll be invoicing you later on for that. Now we do have Kate Bourne coming up in a sec from VARTA, and her role is the Donor Registered Services Manager. So if you do have any questions for her As you're listening, please text in on 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. We've had a few messages in already. Single parents, this is from Cam. Single parents are raising wonderful children and have been for a long time. So I find that article with the lady being raised by two loving women rubbish, as you do not need a man and a woman.
And just on that note quickly, I think that raises really important point, which is just sometimes it's really useful when you see rubbish like that to literally just throw it away.
Yeah, of course.
Self-protection during this next month, I think, is going to be really important.
Also, loving the combination tonight of Daniel and David, the double D's. XO love from our very, very lovely producer, Gina, who's actually sick at the moment. So she's on the couch with a cold compress. Is that, I'm not even knowing what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Must be a lesbian thing. Anyway, Kate Bourne from Varta, she joins us. She is an infertility counsellor since the early 90s with a special interest in donor conception. She connects donor-conceived people, donors and parents. She runs a peer support group for donor-conceived adults and organises the annual Time to Tell seminar to help parents to talk to their kids about how they became a family. Kate is a chair of the Australian and New Zealand Infertility Counsellors Association and is a board member of the Fertility Society of Australia. Kate is also published in peer-reviewed journals and textbooks, spoken at Australian and international conferences, and written the children's book, Sometimes It Takes Three to Make a Baby. Kate, welcome to Family Matters.
Thank you for having me.
Rainbow families often mention Varta. Could you please tell us who Varta is and what do they do?
Well, firstly, we're not the battery company of the same name. We are the Victorian Assisted Reproductive Treatment Authority, and that's what our initials stand for. And our role is really to provide information for people, the general public, to help them make choices about their fertility, including things like IVF, donor conception, surrogacy, and also for families who have used that technology, who are interested in connecting with their donor, we manage the donor conception registers.
Now, obviously, you are the Victorian authority. Why is it important? Obviously, the legislation is very different from state to state.
Yeah.
How does the Victorian authority differ to some of the other authorities elsewhere in the country? And why is it important that we have our own authority here?
Well, we're actually really lucky to have one, and in many states there isn't an equivalent. And also we've had legislation in Victoria since 1988, so that was a world first.
Mm.
And so we've been really, really lucky to have such incredibly progressive legislation and also support services.
Because the Victorian legislation is actually renowned for being some of the more progressive legislation, especially in Australia, to deal with assisted reproductive technologies.
Absolutely. So in the 1st of March this year, all donor-conceived people have the right to know who their donor is. So that's their name, date of birth and donor code. The donor doesn't necessarily have to have contact, but that is a real world first. And that's for all donor-conceived people, regardless of when they were created.
So what has been some of the main benefits behind that change to the law?
Well, for a lot of people to not know where they come from, is really, really significant. So it's really, really important that they have that information.
So on the flip side with the donor part, has there been any issues with that information now being... Is it true that the donor could have donated thinking that it's going to remain anonymous and now that information will now be public to
That's right.
So has there been any issues behind that part of it?
Oh, so it's always a balance of balancing up rights and needs, and I guess the government decided that the needs of the donor-conceived people were the most important, and they're also very important protections that the donors can put in place. So they can put lodge a contact preference, and so there is the donor-conceived person needs to sign an undertaking, and if that's breached, there's a substantial fine. Yeah. The other really significant thing is that parents in Victoria can apply for information about their donor. In that case, the donor can say yes or no. And we also offer different ways of communicating. So if the donor wasn't comfortable to share his identifying details, then we can do things like intermediary email in a non-identifying way.
But this change in the legislation here in Victoria is actually in keeping with some of the... Well, certainly the international human rights treaties, which do state that it's really important for children to be familiar with their biological parents.
That's absolutely correct. And the what's really interesting is in under our Act, the welfare of the child is the very first and the most important thing that we do. So everything we do is centred around the welfare of the child.
So yes. Perhaps we should just take a step back for a moment. Perhaps we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, donating gametes and things like that later in the program. But to begin, what exactly do we mean when we talk about assisted reproductive technologies?
So it's, I guess, it covers IVF, it covers donor conception, it covers surrogacy, it covers egg donation and embryo donation and sperm donation. So the full gamut.
We've covered a lot of these topics on Family Matters in the past. But what kind of these assisted reproductive treatments are legal in Australia, and what are the parts that are illegal?
Well, it's not legal to pay donors here. So ever since right from 1988, you couldn't pay donors, so they've always been altruistic.
Can I just clarify, when you say it's not legal to pay donors, do you mean to pay surrogates, or do you mean to pay for sperm donations? Or
So any sort of donors and also surrogates, other than reimbursing them for costs.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware that, for instance... sperm donation, say you wouldn't be paying for.
So it's quite different from other countries.
Yeah.
So we're quite unique in Australia. We don't pay for blood donors. You might have seen the program on Four Corners this week. We don't pay for blood donors, and we don't pay for sperm donors or egg donors.
And as you said, that is different to a lot of other jurisdictions around the world. What are some of the ethical or underlying reasons for this particular regime?
Well, I think, I'd have to guess what the legislators are thinking. And so we abide by the legislation rather than leading it.
Sure.
We don't develop the policy. But I think they're really wanting to make sure that people are donating for, I guess, the right reasons. Mm. And they're not donating for financial reasons. Certainly talking to donor-conceived people who, if they're aware that payment's been made, they may feel that sort of cheapens the way they were created.
So you spoke about the legislation there. So you're saying that VARTA don't have any input or not...
We're not
consulted with the government with any of those legislations?
The government certainly... we work very closely, but the government decides the policy and we abide by that, yeah. The other really important thing is all donation is identity release donation since 1998. So, donors have been donating for a long time knowing that they could be identified when the child is 18. And there's a bit of a myth that donations drop when that happens, but it's actually not the case. So I'd just like to myth bust that.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So, because a lot of people argue against... mandatory disclosure or a regime regulating that in the interests of donations, saying that donations will fall if we introduce legislation of that sort. Yeah. So that's clearly not the case.
So absolutely not correct. What you find, though, is you get a different sort of donor. So you get a donor who perhaps might be a bit older. We're certainly in the early days, there were a lot of very young donors, and perhaps they weren't really, some of them say they were a bit too young to be making those decisions. Mm. And so now you might get sort of older, more perhaps thoughtful donors who are comfortable with this, and you want them to be comfortable with the potential of contact.
Now, we are starting to dig really deep into the topic now, which I love to see. We are talking to Kate Bourne, who is a donor... a donor register services manager for VARTA. We will be talking more about the family side of it soon with the children and telling children. I'm sure that conversation is intriguing at best. Now, if you do have any questions for Kate, please text in 0427JOY949 or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9. Another great show on our program schedule is Outtakes at 7 o'clock on Monday nights.
And thank you.
Daniel, the host there, is filling in for Family Matters tonight. Gina is very sick and at home, and we do send her regards there. I'll be around at about 9:30 with a block of chocolate and...
She'll hold you to that.
Yeah, I know. I think she's probably after a beverage that's famous for Greeks. I guess that's what she'll be after. We are joined in the studio by Kate Bourne, who is a donor registers services manager for VARTA, which stands for Victorian Assisted Reproductive Treatment Authority. I know there's a lot of words there, but luckily Kate is here to explain what her role is all about.
So I think I have the best job in the world. I just love connecting people, you know, donors, donor-conceived people and parents together. We are really seeing sort of new forms of families connecting. It's also fantastic to help people create families. And having worked as an IVF counsellor for many years at the sort of, I guess, the beginning end, like that doesn't make sense, beginning end, but at the beginning, it's great to see families further down the track. And
so can you tell us a little bit more about the process? You talked about you love your job so much about connecting parents and children together. What is that process? And what's maybe start at the start? What's the first process?
So if people want to, and I guess we, you know, the listeners are mostly parents. So Victoria is fairly unique in that parents can apply while their kids are younger than 18. And so we see quite a few parents who want to initiate that contact with the donor early. So they can either apply to the voluntary register or the central register.
What's the difference? What's the difference between the registers?
So the voluntary register works by if there's a match, and so it's all very voluntary. So people can apply to the voluntary register and they could actually match with another family who've used the same donor, because donors can be used for up to 10 women, or they might match with the donor. Yeah. Now, if they know they definitely want to connect with their donor and they don't want to, you know, try on the voluntary register, they can go straight to the central register, and then there's an outreach to their donor.
So that's really interesting. So you have one donor who's potentially donating to a number of different families.
That's right, yeah.
The new legislation that we've briefly touched on tonight, does that mean that a child has a right to know if they have a biological brother or sister?
So the donor-conceived people, all the parents can find out non-identifying information about the other children.
Yeah.
So that... you know, their year and gender and month of birth.
Okay.
But they can't necessarily outreach to them.
Sure.
But if those other people are on the voluntary register, then they can connect.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting. Mm. It always scares me. This is always scares me from a donor's point of view. Is there ever that moment in the back of the head they're going to think that 10 people are just going to suddenly knock on their door?
It could be more than 10 because it's 10 women and they could have more than... But the donor can also... So say, David, if you were considering being a donor, you could say that you only want to donate to a certain number of families, or you might only want to donate to, you know, friends of yours. So donors do have control with that. And because there is a process involved, VARTA would be contacting them rather than the family, although of course with DNA testing becoming more and more common, I guess it is possible to find a donor without VARTA. But we find people are extremely respectful and would much rather VARTA contact the donor than for them to do it out of the blue. They don't want to just rock up in case the donor isn't very happy about that.
I guess so for children who have been conceived with the aid of ATR, which is your favourite...
ART.
I made that mistake.
ART,
before,
just think
I?
ART.
Okay, ART. Why is it so important for children to know? What's the foundation of that?
Well, I guess not everyone necessarily wants or needs to know, but a significant proportion might. And I think it's all about having choice. So for those that really want to know, then it can really, people describe that it's a bit like missing a puzzle piece, looking in the mirror, not knowing who you look like, whether your personality is like the donor's. So it's really, really significant for them.
And at what age for a child, let's say they haven't been told yet and maybe they find out later in life through other avenues, yeah, what's sort of the ages where people start pursuing to find their parents?
Well, we even see people are, you know, ringing us when they're pregnant, asking about wanting to write a thank you letter to the donor. They do have to wait until they have a baby for the details to be on the donor register. But we see people write from with babes in arms to older children.
Now, can we just come back to the donor for a moment? We have had a message come through, a question for you. Mm-hmm. So can a donor choose only to donate sperm to particular types of couples, i.e. lesbian couples or gay couples or straight couples, or perhaps we can take that further to particular religions, or can they vet who they donate to?
They could only do that if they do a known donation. So if they choose to donate to a particular person.
Friends or,
But because within the legislation it's not possible to discriminate, then it's not possible to donate to a particular sort of person.
And do you yourself as an authority, so not you personally, but the authority, do you have checks and balances for who you let donate?
Well, all donors have counselling before they proceed, and so in the counselling, and that's done by the clinic counsellors, not by VARTA. So those clinic counsellors really prepare them for all their legal rights and responsibilities, and there are also really, really detailed consent forms. So it's quite a thoughtful process that they need to go through, and also if they have a partner, then the partner needs to attend as well.
So for parents and that who have had a child through that process of IVF or so forth, when is a good time to possibly tell the child of how they were conceived?
Yeah. We suggest that people actually start practicing when they're pregnant, not because it's going to help the baby, but it's going to help parents get the words right. And so there's no such thing as starting too early. So it gets easier and easier the earlier you do it, and then you grow in confidence.
Well, my sister was an IVF child, this was in the days I remember my mother had to fly to Sydney every kind of second week for the treatment because it wasn't available in Victoria, and that wasn't actually that long ago. She was
told. That surprises me because Melbourne was the first place in Australia to have IVF. So.
I'll have to discuss that with my mother.
Yeah, I thought it was New South Wales as well.
We are the home in Australia. This is perhaps why we've
maybe
got
she
so
was
much,
just putting herself up in a hotel for the weekend, and I was a 13-year-old boy who was gullible enough. But no, the reason I bring that up is because my sister was told from day dot, as soon as she was young enough to actually understand, she was explained that, you know, there was some help and that was a really good thing because it meant that my mother really wanted a child and was happy to pursue these options.
And that's exactly what we find. For children who can never remember, being sat down and told is really the best outcome because you see how comfortable they are. It's just part of who they are, their identity. And so that's really what we're aiming for.
So what can be some of the issues of not telling a child at an early age, and maybe it gets to that teenage years or adult life? Yeah.
Well, I guess the older the person is, the more difficult it is to incorporate into their identity. So we find that it's never too late to tell. So we even, you know, we have contact with our parents of whose sons and daughters are in their 40s. And it's still better to tell them then than not. But it would have been so much easier for their kids to have learnt, you know, earlier. So we've got heaps of information on our website to help parents. And we run seminars as well.
And we'll plug the website definitely on our social medias and later on in the show. Has that changed a little bit from a generation ago about now that the message is now tell them as early as possible? Has that changed? Has that communication changed?
It's completely changed. So a generation ago, parents were encouraged not to tell, and often didn't speak, you know, to each other again.
Why do you think that was?
It was really to protect the, well, in those days it was all heterosexual couples, and so the man suffered from infertility, and often it was something that was really, really difficult for him, and often men felt quite emasculated. Mm. And so it was partly to protect him, and then also it was partly to protect the donor, because also legally things weren't as sorted as they are now, and so there were concerns that the donor could make claims and you know, come back to the couple, or that the couple could ask the donor for maintenance, which, you know, certainly isn't the case now. And so that's why it happened. And I think we're looking at a very different time back then. People weren't nearly as open about all sorts of things. So,
and sorry to stop this interest in the discussions getting so well, but we do have some sponsorship announcements. We are talking to Kate Bourne, who is a donor registered services manager for VARTA, and I keep getting that out correctly. I'm sure I'm going to stumble on that at some stage. You are listening to Family Matters with Daniel and David tonight. We'll be back soon. You're listening, well, you know what you're listening to, I just said it. Family Matters on Joy 94.9, my favourite hour of the radio, but my second favourite hour of the radio is Outtakes on Monday at 7 o'clock, and I'm joined here by a late inclusion, Daniel.
And I feel like a part of the team. I feel like I've been here for years.
Now, please text in as well if you had a question for Kate, who is a donor registered services manager for VARTA. You can text in on 0427-JOY-949, or you can email on air at joy.org.au. Some people have jumped onto that. Anthony, he's messaged in, "I became a sperm donor to a lesbian couple. We all decided to stay in touch after the birth. We marched together at the rally on Saturday. We were all very proud."
Beautiful.
That warms my heart. Anthony, thank you very much. And also, Sean from Collingwood has reached into his pockets and become a member of Joy tonight.
Welcome, Sean.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Joy family.
Yeah, because family matters.
If you want to message in and join the conversation tonight, you absolutely can. Message in on 0427-JOY-949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
Now, we were talking to Kate about when is an appropriate time to tell the children of how they were conceived. What are the benefits of telling the children earlier rather than late, which we sort of touched on, but if not told earlier, are there ways they can find out for themselves?
Mm.
They certainly can. We sort of touched on DNA before, and we're finding it's happening more and more that people are discovering that they're donor conceived through DNA testing. You've probably heard of Ancestry.com and 23andMe and some of the big donor DNA sort of banks, and they're doing a lot of promotion at the moment. And so people can just go along and think they're finding a little bit about their cultural heritage and actually discover they're not the who they thought they were. So,
in your experiences, in your role, is there any specific stories about how somebody has found out?
Oh, we get stories all the time. So we can, we've had stories of where other relatives have told, people have told in anger, people with, you know, elderly parents with dementia have blurted it out at the dinner table,
wow.
all sorts of things. So, yeah. It's very difficult to keep a secret for a lifetime. It causes a lot of stress and strain.
And I'm assuming that would be stress for parents as well, and obviously the kid not knowing.
Yeah.
And I guess focusing on a same-sex couple, obviously the kid's going to be a big clue to it.
That...
you know what I mean? I'd have to paint the picture there.
The people that don't tell tend to be straight couples.
Yeah.
And solo mums and same-sex couples pretty much always tell. So they... what they might grapple with is exactly how to do it and what to actually say.
So for parents wishing to speak to the children about how they were conceived and identity, how would that... I can imagine... I think Daniel and I have probably both had that conversation about coming out to our parents and family and friends, and we probably find that to be a difficult conversation. I feel like this could be a very difficult conversation as well. And how would this conversation go?
Well, it's actually not so hard if you break it down. So it's, you know, that all babies come from, apart from the man and apart from the woman, and you can use the word eggs or sperm. You know, I think it's good to use the real words, but if people feel a bit uncomfortable about that, and that, you know, depending on the scenario, the story is a little bit different. So say for a lesbian couple that, you know, to make a baby you need, you know, the part for the man and part for the woman, and we're two women, so we needed the boy bit, and so we needed that, so we went. And then again, it depends whether they're using home insemination or going to a clinic. So we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, there are a lot of men that know that you would be great mums, and they have given their boy bits to help start families. And so the boy bit was planted inside, you know, mum, and she got pregnant, and the rest is history.
So for parents listening to Family Matters who might be in that exact same position and haven't told their children before, what sort of resources are available to them?
Yeah, so we have an enormous amount of information on our website. We've got, for your lesbian listeners, Jack and Sarah from Rainbow Families made a podcast some time ago, and it's fantastic. We also have Time to Tell seminar once a year. It is actually sold out, so please don't turn up.
I did actually want to ask about Time to Tell. Can you tell us? I know it is.
Yeah. You can't get a free ticket, Daniel.
Yeah. Well, it's sold out. It's sold out. For people who might consider going along next year, is Time to Tell, and what kind of conversations do you have there?
So it's a huge seminar. It goes all day. We've got 150 people coming. So it's for people considering donor treatment. It's also for people who've used a surrogate, right through to people who are pregnant, to people with babes in arms and with young children. Donors are welcome. Family members are also welcome. So we have a program of why tell, how to tell, and then we have so many real people speaking, because really the best thing you can do for a child is to make your own family storybook. So we have examples of those, and we also have donor-conceived adults who were told or who found out late in life, and comparing those with we have parents and either teenagers or young adults from all different family constellations. So it's a very big panel. And then we have breakout groups in the afternoon. So we have breakout groups for lesbian mums, solo mums, donor egg parents, donor sperm with straight families, surrogate families, and donors and donor-conceived people. So it's a huge undertaking.
A family storybook sounds interesting. What's it all involved?
Yeah. So there are lots of kids' books that your listeners might be interested in, and they're great for families to read to their kids, but all kids actually love a book about them. And also sometimes the books may not exactly fit your family circumstance. So the best thing you can do is actually write your own.
Create your own, yeah.
And it could be a movie, it could be a scrapbook, it could be, you could upload photos on one of those sort of photoshopping type books that you can do online.
I imagine one of the really great things about this kind of seminar is the chance for parents to interact with other parents who are in similar positions to them.
Yeah.
That kind of network building must be really important.
It is. It is. And we hope people swap contact details. For every breakout group that's run by a counsellor and a parent facilitator, and so they're experienced parents who've had to, you know, have the tough conversations, and the questions that are often in the middle of the supermarket or in the car or
a brunch with smashed avocado.
Yeah.
On that note, are there many online kind of forums that parents do you support? Those kind of online forums, because online forums are always tricky at the best of times, aren't they?
Well, we have a very deep and long-lasting connection with Rainbow Families. We commissioned their outsource resource, and Jack and I actually go back a very long way because she went to the clinic that I worked at, so we've known each other for years.
Jack Thomas,
So, Family Matters own.
We do love Jack on here.
And Flick, yeah. So, yeah, I've known Flick for years. I was was, I think, the only straight person attending the the seminars that Rainbow Families have, you know, been running for a very long time. So I found those enormously helpful myself.
We love Rainbow Families here on Family Matters. How important is it to have an organisation like Rainbow Families here in Victoria?
Oh, I think they're a sensational organisation, and I imagine for families, it's their resources are so good, and their events. So yeah, I think it's I think peer support is very important.
Very important, yeah.
And I think parents share that wisdom, and why try and do it yourself on your own when so many parents have done it before.
And we have so much love for Rainbow Families Victoria. I know they're a regular listener to our podcast, so we've got to keep saying nice things about them. But the nice things that we say about Rainbow Families Victoria is not forced. Like, if you get to meet these people involved in this organisation, they are so warm and welcoming.
Oh, absolutely.
And I can imagine them being the best peer support that somebody...
Absolutely, absolutely. So we launched our the Outspoken resource at midsummer last year, and at a big family picnic, and oh, it was just beautiful, really gorgeous, yeah.
Well, fantastic. We'll hold you on for a little bit longer. Normally we kick the guest out at 8:55-ish, but we will hold you on right to the end because we love your company so much. We are talking to Kate Bourne, who is a donor registered service manager for Vahata. You're listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9. Family Matters on Joy 94.9 or 95 minus 0.1, whatever you want to call it. now, we'll just touch on Vahata quickly. The website is www.vahata, which is VARTA.org.au. Kate, it's been a pleasure tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. And we're touching on something else.
Well, we were chatting about The Kids Are All Right during that song, because it's not actually for people who are wanting to think about how to have discussions with their kids. It's really not a good example, is it?
Well, in terms of connecting donor-conceived people with their donor, it was how not to. It was to do it on your own. Don't tell your parents. No intermediary support services. Yes, it was how not to do it. So, yeah.
Well, even the title itself is a bit... The kids are all right, even though there's been, you know, even though the lesbian couple.
And ideally, the mother shouldn't have an affair with the donor. that's a golden rule.
Well, we'll put all that information on our social medias. Thank you so much, Kate, for coming on. Now, speaking of connecting, we are now going to be connecting with the Woods now. So what are you guys talking about tonight?
Well, we have got one of my favourite personal artists, Tom Goss.
Oh, duh, the Gossometer.
The Gossometer. I like that. I'm sure he would like that too.
So what's, tell us, Tom, tell us a bit about Tom.
So Tom is an American songwriter, singer, actor who released back in 2013 one of his hits, Bears, which...
How appropriate.
I know.
I barely know that song.
Oh, come on. I'm sure you know it word for word, backwards and forwards.
Where's the pun bell? You didn't even get on the pun there.
I missed that one.
Sorry. Anyways, Daniel, pleasure having you on as well.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe you might pop on again. Who knows? Now, it is that time of the night where Beck, our resident legal eagle, loves to finish off the show with something that I'm not really a big fan of. She likes doing this little wolf gurr bit.
But we love it.
I know you do, Ken, but unfortunately it is my turn tonight, so I'm coming up with it. Please don't knock me for it. But
I can't promise anything.
Wolf greatest outro, because I've done it, not Beck. Family Matters, what's up next?
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.